Yo, welcome back to Behind the Sticks, UFL. Unfortunately, your boy Joshua Housetown Housel could not make it to this episode, so it's a solo adventure. It's just me, Ian Spaghetti Sacchetti, pulling you through the weekly recap of what we saw in the inaugural week, week one of the UFL season. So, we could start off with in order of all the games, start with the Battle of Champions, XFL versus USFL. But that's not what we're going to do here. It's not what Behind the Sticks stands for. And to be honest, it's not what you want to hear. I want to talk about the loogie that changed a game, the spitball that affects football, the drool that was against the rules. A DC Defenders player, I won't name names, but I will say numbers, number 59, spit on one of my precious Brahma players. Now, this occurred after the defender scored a touchdown on a Kiki Kute slant route to bring the game to 18-20. Now, up to this point, it seemed like the Brahmas were routing the game. Went to halftime 20-12. I'll get more into that. But the defenders had all the momentum. The score, 20-18. 2-point conversion to tie the game. 3-point to take the lead. Then he spits on him. He gets ejected. That's your starting tackle gone for the rest of the game. About 7 minutes left in the game. But also the penalty would be added on the 2-point attempt. But obviously a call of this magnitude is not going to be quick, which gives the Brahmas offensive coordinator time to tell Wade Phillips he saw a false start on guess who? Number 59. And in the UFL, you can challenge that. So the Brahmas do, and they win. So from 18-20 to second and goal from the 28-yard line, all on the same player, and he's ejected. Starting right tackle gone. Or he might be the left tackle. I'm not sure. I think he was the right tackle. Don't quote me on anything. But later on in that drive, Te'amu gets eviscerated on a play and has to go out. He's injured. He got his shit pushed in. So the Brahmas get called for taunting, which extends the drive. But when Te'amu comes back in, he throws a pick. And because he's probably still reeling from that hit, and it's basically returned for a pick six down to like the 4 or 5 yard line. The Brahmas would score this clinching touchdown to end the game. But like, man, that doesn't stand in my XFL, my USFL, or my UFL. You shouldn't be spitting on other people. Like, that's gross. It's inhumane. It's not what men do. All those cliches that everybody wants to hear. But like, really, it's gross. It's stupid. It's uncalled for. Like, grow up. And, you know, in the football terms, literally cost your team the potential to win that game. So, and like, this game had such a great play that I will get to in the sauciest plays of the week. But like, and I can't even talk about it first or bring up the fact that my Brahmas, who were power ranked dead last, dominated the defenders who were the talk of the XFL coming in. So like, it's really a shame, but it is kind of crazy because like, I thought the Brahmas were going to choke and blow the game. I was saying it the whole time. So when this happened and it turned everything around, I was happy. But happy my team won. Not happy for this debauchery. But anyway, we'll go into a more regular weekly roundup. But from what I saw in the Brahmas game and the defenders, without any of this spitballing going on, is the Brahmas were more aggressive going for it on fourth down consistently. They were going for the big plays, the trick plays. They came out on a mission to try to win this game. It seemed like they knew they were the underdog and wanted to pull out all the stops, but were kind of evenly matched with the defenders. And the defenders, to me, like, you know, seemed like they stayed in the game true and steady, were never out of it kind of confidence, but they never played to win. They played like they expected to win. And if they just followed what they were doing, they were going to win, which I mean, I guess is like, go the course, we know what we're doing, but I mean, it almost worked, but it didn't in the end, and that's really what matters. So it seems like maybe they should have tried to mix things up, but, you know, I'm not going to fault them. The, you know, fluke loogie thing and Te'amu getting hurt, I feel like really hurt the chances. But I knew Wade Phillips could coach. I knew the Roughnecks had a good offense in the XFL, and the Brahmas picked up that offensive coordinator. And John Trey Kirkland is a good receiver. He got crushed on that play and fumbled. but like anyone would have fumbled there. So I feel like the Brahmas will surprise people, not me. I figured they would be good. But see, they're moving up the power rankings. We'll see how they look in 4th and 15 for their odds next week. But in the highly anticipated opening game of the UFL season, we had the XFL champion Renegades versus the USFL reigning back-to-back champion Stallions. So, as I said last week or in the preview, I kind of thought the Renegades were just a lucky Cinderella story. Housetown persuaded me to change my view on who I was picking, but in the end of the day, you know, I changed it. I can't go back and say I didn't. I said the Renegades would win, but my brain said Stallions. I was easily talked into it, but I'm not shocked at what happened. The Renegades won, I think, 4 games in the regular season last year and then had a lucky playoff run because they switched quarterbacks and nobody really had tape on what he was doing in that offense. So, like, and it was a trade, I think, like a week 10 trade. I don't know. But the Stallions are legit. What I saw for the Renegades is I got to give them, they played with a lot of heart, but they were outmanned, outcoached, and outpowered. They were hanging out early, but that was mostly because of the mistakes the Stallions were making. I feel like the Stallions were kind of giving the Renegades a chance at this game instead of losing it. Like, the Renegades just couldn't keep up with what was going on. Like, the Stallions showed rust, but, like, for a half, and then they went on to dominate. Like, I feel like the Renegades were the weakest team in the XFL, so I'm not sure how fantastical this win is. But, like, I can't say I'm not impressed with what the Stallions did. Yeah, I think they're legit. I mean, I think they're probably one of the best teams in the UFL. The next game of the day, the Battle Hawks were at the Panthers. Didn't know anything about the Panthers. I knew the Battle Hawks, and like I said, they weren't going to win by 7. I thought they would win, but I didn't think they would win by 7. I said they would like to, they like to come back in games, keep them close, and that's what they did, almost. They almost came back to win the game with a last-minute touchdown. God, that 64-yard field goal twice is just as nice. Double nice. We'll say double nice. Jake Bates hitting in that. Obviously, people are going to call from the NFL, but I wish Housel was here so I could ask someone for some feedback on this. Is it easier or harder to kick a football in warmer or colder weather? Because, like, colder the ball's harder, yeah. But, like, apparently it's easy to hit in Denver because it's mile high and the air super thin. So is the air thinner when it's colder? Like, that's what I'm trying to figure out. Is, like, this 64-yard field goal better than an NFL 64-yarder or worse? I mean, don't get me wrong, 64 yards is 64 yards. That's hella impressive. But I want to see the terms of how impressive it is. Because if you tell me Justin Tucker can hit like from 82 in this weather, then 64 doesn't seem as good. But that's why I need a little feedback. Obviously, Justin Tucker's amazing. And clutching up to win the game, hitting it twice, I got very caught off or fucking distracted there. But yeah, Panthers won. I think they were the biggest dogs of the week. And Battlehawks lost. I picked the Battlehawks to be one of the better teams, and they kind of let me down a little bit. What I really saw is Michigan's defense is for real, or the Battlehawks have an offensive line problem. Because I saw when McCarron could string together some throws and get some time, they could do some things. But most of the time, they were just in the backfield. I mean, maybe I'm just reminiscing of last year, because that was a lot of what happened to the Battlehawks. But thinking of last year, I think they also lost to the Defenders with an almost comeback in the first week. So maybe they're destined to just be the same team, do the same old things. I mean, I think they'll be solid if they keep getting pressured and get dominated by defensive lines. Not really thrilled about that. Also not thrilled about how in the two XFL versus USFL matches, XFL lost both. But I do want to throw some love to the Panthers running back, Wes Hills. He's leading the UFL in rushing yards for the first week. So, I mean, maybe the odds makers were wrong when they said the Panthers weren't good. They were also way off on the Brahmas. Like, Brahmas are legit. Then we went into the final game, since I already went over the Brahmas defenders, is Showboats Roughnecks. You know, from not knowing anything about these teams besides some names for the Showboats, I feel like the Roughnecks are a middle-of-the-pack team. Like, they'll be near the playoff race, but fall out of it around week 6 or 7-ish kind of team. Not awful, but not good. The Showboats, however, surprised me. They dominated for most of the game. They were doing what they needed to do to keep drives alive, at least flip field position on offense, and stopping drives for the Roughnecks and keeping them from getting any momentum. And Kukoc, man, he seems to have that cooking it spark. Like that I'm going to dominate and win games we shouldn't type of thing. And come on, with Vinny, the Dos, Papali, they're going to be in the mix, I think, for that second playoff spot. Like, I feel like the USFL division is the Stallions to lose. So this spot's between the Showboats and the Panthers. And, like, for the Roughnecks, Reuben Foster was making some plays, and the defense looked good. But, man, this team looked lost. Maybe the rust is real, and they'll prove me wrong. But you know what I'm rescinding? Right now I'm saying the Roughnecks are back. I rescind what I said earlier. This is the second worst team. You know what? I'll let you feel about the Renegades and contention with them for the worst team as the season progresses. I was basically my weekly roundup, guys. Wish Housetown was here to contribute. We'll be back next week, like I said. And I'll be back shortly with some power rankings. This week's episode of Behind the Sticks is brought to you by Friends. Friends. God, I wish I had some right now. Very alone. Very lonely. And friends cure that. Friends make you happy. They make you happy when you're sad. And I don't have a friend right now. And I'm sad about it. Couldn't you use a friend today? Aren't friends great? Time for the power rankings. Like I said, they're going to be quick. Housel ain't here to argue with me, so these are de facto. Their laws, write them down, the 8 commandments. Coming in at number 8, worst team, Renegades. Call them fake and they are. Enough said. Number 7, Houston Roughnecks. I talked myself into it, and I don't like them. Battlehawks. They had the spirit to win, but they didn't win. I still think they're good, but come on now. You can't have losers above winners. Number 5, Panthers. Show me more stop and good offense. I said the Battlehawks would try to win in the end, and they did. It took a 64-yard bomber, and I don't know if you can count on those. Number 4, DC Defenders. I know I said I don't put losers above winners, but honestly, I think this team is pretty solid, and they were some nonsense away from tying it up. They played smart, except for that, and were in it for most of the game, even though everything said they were being dominated. Think they could do something. Showboats. Kukoc. Number 2, my San Antonio Brahmas. Now, for many reasons, I think the Brahmas are good. I put a lot of them out there last week in the last episode, but new offense, good head coach, played to win. They just need to clean up some third down conversions, prove they can sustain some drives the natural way without having to go for it on fourth, get the running game, the short yard game going a little bit more. And I don't really see anybody beating the Brahmas. And then number 1, the Stallions, championship pedigree, reigning champions, came in, dominated, really shot themselves in the footer. They could have scored the over by themselves. So I feel like until the Stallions show some weakness or the Brahmas are consistently dumpstering people, it's going to be pretty locked for them at number 1. So those are the power rankings. Bet on it for the end of the season because that's how it's going to end up. You love them, you missed them, and I love doing them. Here are Spaghetti's sauciest plays of week 1. So, first and goal after a huge play for the Michigan Panthers. Quarterback Perry takes the ball on play action. Battlehawks get some pressure and force Perry on the run, where he throws into traffic. The ball is batted around, and Quintario Cole is able to catch the ball off his dick, saving points, scoring the interception. Number 4, 3rd and 9 in the running game's offensive line give Perez a nice pocket to step up in, and he does everything right as he finds Isaiah Winstead on a post, burning both defenders for 51 yards and the first tutty of the UFL season. Let's go, 2024! Number 3, Kukoc was cooking on a drive, which ended up being capped off by son of a Philly legend, Vinny Papali, as he slides on his tippy toes, dragging both feet as he catches the ball. For the touchdown. Nasty catch. Literally one of the best I've ever seen. Number two sauciest play is fourth and goal with under a minute to go. AJ Hot Wife McCarron buys time in the pocket to find Marcel Aitman, who converts and scores the game-winning touchdown. But wait, they don't win the game. So this isn't a saucy play. Oh yeah, it's the booming monster 64-yard field goal from Jake Bates. Twice. Dude was iced and still hit it back-to-back. When your kicker's this good, it doesn't matter if he's the best player on your team. And the number one sauciest play of the week is with under a minute to go in the half, the Brahmas line up for a field goal and motion to an empty backfield with the punter. The announcer's assuming it's going to be a pooch punt, but Brad Wynn says no. Brahmas punter sends a man in motion, buys time in the pocket, and finds center, the big man, Alex Mollett, running wide open down the middle of the field for the tutty before the half. First trick play touchdown of the UFL. First big man touchdown for the UFL. Proving Wade Phillips doesn't have balls. He has watermelons, people, for that call. And those are the sauciest plays of the week. Now we're going to show some players some respect here. Give the individuals going out there some of the love they deserve. And we're going to go into some of the stat leaders. So first, we're going to go into passing yards. It's actually Jordan Te'amu who is leading the league with 227 through his first game. You know, a lot of the game he was down, so throwing kind of makes sense. But still respectable. You got to remember, these numbers aren't going to be as high as in the NFL. But you'll have some of those scoring finanzas as they go on. I don't know if a finanza is a word, but we're going to deal with it. Second place is AJ McCarron with 216. Luis Perez for Arlington put up 214, kind of respectable, but didn't really mean much. And then my boy Cookus is down there with 204 in fourth. And you know what? I'll just go to five and give Matt Corral, quarterback for the Stallions, since I'm so high on that team, respect versus 201. And if we go over for passing touchdowns, let's see. We got two gentlemen with two. We got the Garbies, Chase Garbers himself for my Brahmas, and AJ McCarron with two passing touchdowns. Then really it's just a couple guys with one. Going into rushing yards, I brought up earlier that Wes Hills is leading with 85 yards. Then we have in second place with 67, CJ Marable for Birmingham. And then got Martinez with 52, another Birmingham player. Sorry, guys, name is Adrian Martinez. He's their rushing quarterback, so kind of leading the charge. Brahma's running back McFarland is up there with 47, and then Gallman for St. Louis is at 40. So, you know, no one too high. So West Hills 85 is pretty good, but looking at that rushing attack for the Stallions, if you've got two out of the three best rushers, you're going to do well. So receiving leaders, we got Ty Scott for DC. Makes sense, Sam, who threw the most with 87 yards on four receptions. So pretty solid. No touchdowns, though. Then we got Kane for Birmingham with 66 yards. On three targets, or three receptions, six targets. You know, he's got a touchdown. My boy Kirkland was 61 in third. That fumble kept him from having a damn near perfect game. Then Winstead and Aitman tied with 60, both with touchdowns. So, you know, the receiving, the wide receivers are showing themselves a little bit. They're coming alive. No one's got multiple receiving touchdowns. But E.J. Perry for the Michigan Panthers, the only player with multiple rushing touchdowns. So the Panthers also have that nice rushing game, so that'll keep it going. Just going to go over the sack leaders real quick. Greg Reeves looks like he's got two, and I think that's it. We got a couple guys with one and a half. We got C. Davis for Birmingham, D. Wise for Michigan, and W. Ray for San Antonio, all with over one. But for tackles, the name will sound familiar for us NFL fans. Leading the league in tackles with 11 is Kai Nakua, Puka Nakua's brother. So, proving he can play in the UFL, the Nakua boys are taking over. Then we've got two players on San Antonio with nine, Jay Mosley and Jay Williams. Emily for Arlington has eight, and Reuben Foster for Houston has seven. He's also got that tackle for loss, the pick. He was just making plays everywhere. Only real player I saw on their team. Another interesting thing, though, I saw in the stats is that even though they don't have the quarterback with the most yards, with sacks counting and everything, the Stallions lead the league in passing yards and rushing yards in a game. I know it's through one game, and they're also 67% on third down, so pretty dominant. I don't know much about them being an XFL fan, but seems like this team's pretty legit. But yeah, I digress. I mean, I'm rambling here, so enough of player stats. Everybody wants the 4th and 15, so that's coming up next. You're going to hear my bets. Time to make some money. I'm up $5 on my bets. I wasn't joking. Bet the under, guys. But maybe not this week. I actually saw a game. I'll bet the over. Spoiler. It's time for everybody's favorite segment, the segment that'll make you rich. Maybe. Don't actually. This isn't financial advice. Please don't listen to that. Please, I only bet like a dollar or two per game. Please do not bet a lot based on what I'm saying. Don't come after me. It's 4th and 15, guys. It's time for the pick'ems. So let's go. We'll start off with the first game of the week. Saturday at noon, we've got the San Antonio Brahmas, my Brahmas, going in to face the Memphis Showboats. So after being 6-point dogs, the horns are out. The horns are up. Ride on Brahmas. They're 1.5-point favorites at Memphis. Over-under is 40. The spoiler's not going to last too long, folks. I got the Brahmas winning this game. I think the Brahmas are better, but I think the Showboats can score. I think this game's going to go over 40. I say take the Brahmas with the 1.5. I think they'll win by 4 or 5. I think the game goes around like 25-22, one of those, you know, a couple touchdowns for each of these quarterbacks. I think they're slinging it, and I still think my Brahmas are probably better than the Showboats. I think the Showboats are good, but I think the Brahmas are better. The second Saturday game at 8 p.m., the Renegades walk into the call nest, Arlington Renegades at St. Louis Battlehawks. So the Battlehawks are 4-point favorites in this one, and the over-under is 41.5. So honestly, I don't think the Battlehawks are going to lose twice, and I said the Renegades are the worst team in the league. So I say take the Battlehawks. I think 4 points is reasonable. I think they actually just win this game. That was a heartbreaking loss. I think they bounce back and play a little better start to finish. But God, I do not like overs in the XFL, and I don't like the overs in this game. So I say Battlehawks -4, under 41.5. I mean, if you wanted to go crazy, it's +70 for the Renegades to win. So that could be fun. I mean, that could be decent money if you don't want to parlay something. I could see it happening, but I don't expect it to happen. I also bet on the 16 seeds to win in the Final Four, so don't trust me. I like to dream. So our first Sunday game is at 12 noon, where the Birmingham Stallions back-to-back away games go to Michigan to face the Panthers. Now, Stallions are 6.5-point favorites, and the over-under is 41. I don't think the Panthers can do back-to-back wins. I don't know what this huge line hate is on them, but then again, the Stallions are good. I don't think the Panthers will have time to run the ball because I think the Stallions will be up too much on them, and that'll keep their pass rush, you know, honest. So I do think the 6.5 is pretty good. I think the Stallions can cover that. The over-under is tough because that was 41.5 last week, and it went to 41. So, man, that is dicey. I wouldn't touch over under 41. I honestly would leave that alone. I think your best bet here is taking the Stallions -6.5. I think that's the only bet worth taking in this game. But I definitely think the Stallions will win, just straight up. And then the final game, Sunday at 4, we got the Houston Roughnecks going to the Audi Field to take on the DC Defenders. Defenders are 5-point favorites, over under 41. Right now, it's hard to say because I don't know what Tayamu's injury status is. So that's something you're going to have to watch. If he's healthy, he's fine. He just had like a stinger. He's banged up a little bit. You know, he's okay. He rubbed some dirt in it. I see them winning by 5. I'd still take the under, though, because he got hurt. But like if they say he's perfectly healthy, I see a world where it could go over because I think the Defenders are going to pour it on the Roughnecks. But honestly, I say Defenders -5, under 41, I think is good. If Tayamu's still hurt, I know it's -238 for the money line, but I think it's still better to take that with the Defenders because 5 seems like too perfect. Like, these guys know what they're doing over here at DraftKings. I don't know if I said that. If I already did, I'm sorry I'm redundant, but all these lines are DraftKings Sportsbook, people. That's what I use. So going through it again, let you know everything. I got Brahmas over one, covering 1.5 and over 40. I got Battlehawks -4, not touching the over-under. I got Stallions -6.5, also not touching over-under. And then I got Defenders -5, under 41. So that's the 4th and 15. Make some money off these bets. This is not financial advice. And I think that puts week 1 behind us here at Behind the Sticks. And we will catch you next week. XFL over USFL. Rough start, but we got this. This is our time. It's our time down here.